AskGunQuestions.com is a website that we built back in 2007. And since then, for the last 15 years, people have been able to ask questions of simple to advanced nature, and we attempt to answer them in different ways over the years. Join us now as we start a new series to answer gun questions.
Got my own show going. So welcome everybody. It's Gun Questions. It's like my internet just went crazy again. My internet will stay connected when he's driving. But go live on Saturday to attempt to answer questions that come into the website, like the intro says. Tony and I were just chatting off air here while I was orange. So let's just continue that. First off, thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. That was crazy. A double intro.
So anyway, let's get started with why you're on the road. Get everybody up to date on what's happening in New Jersey.
All right. So I've been really busy this year, and because of my injury, I haven't been getting out of the house. Hurt my knee. I just go to work and come home. I was in a lot of pain. I decided to push through today and go to my normal ranges that we had diversity shoots at and get the entire year's schedule from them. So we just did it. So I have the schedule for both Union Hill Gun Club and Recoil Range here in Jersey. So that's three ranges that now we have all the dates for 2024. And I'm looking to expand to at least one or two more ranges this year in New Jersey, if not Pennsylvania. So that's what I'll be doing in the next 2 weeks, trying to actually firm up the rest of the schedule for 2024.
Right on. And then we were just talking about you went to the ranges in person again, or finally, and that they're busy. So that's cool.
Oh, ranges are packed. And today is a very rainy, dreary day in Jersey. And it doesn't make a difference. I mean, they were parked on the grass over here at Union Hill waiting to get in. So between CCW classes here, because Jersey finally has carry permits, between CCW classes and just people coming out to shoot, ranges are packed. That also has impacted my ability to host events. Any range in New Jersey at this time that's hosting a day where I get a classroom for 4 to 6 hours is giving up money, like guaranteed money, to have me host my event there. That's money and range time that they're not getting from someone else when they can fill it up with classes, like $200 student classes. So I just think that's awesome that they're willing to do this and work with me.
It is cool. And it shows that they can see that there's a value from, you know, both for the normalization of guns and for the future generations and, you know, what do you call them, like communities of gun owners. You know, it's not probably a whole bunch of little old ladies that gather the whatever, what's the word, like the interest to go to a gun shop and start to look around, but you're you know, for just that, you're a shoehorn, is that the right word? Like that you're a entrance ramp for all kinds of people.
I can funnel them in, people that you might not even have advertised to or even got. No matter what your ads are, no matter how you're doing it, more than likely these people would not have seen it and not have known about your range. But because I've been doing this so long in unconventional, I guess, firearms owners, not the stereotypical gun owner. That's who I've been working with for so long that I reach people that your usual advertisement can't. And that puts butts in seats, and that's money. So, yeah, it would behoove you to host the Second Is for Everyone event and let people learn about your range from friends and family they trust. And now they're at your range, because we all know the easy part, once they get into the range, is convincing them that this is fun and they're surrounded by a bunch of good people. That's the easy part. The hard part is getting them in the door.
Yeah, seriously. And that's all it takes. And then that person goes home. That one person has a good time. They go home, and who all are they going to talk to? School, church, work, people on the bus waiting in line, you know, at the doctor's office or something. Like, there's just, you know, all the potential that they're going to be able to be another ambassador that you couldn't pay for. Like, you can't put out an ad to say, hey, look, we're looking for gun ambassadors for the gun normalization.
And looking at the photos, because I host the event, I'm really happy during the event. I'm trying to make everyone feel comfortable asking questions, getting people to talk to each other, you know, that didn't come together, but you have this thing in common, and we break bread together with the pizza, and then we go and train together, or we shoot together. So I don't really pay attention to the, what do you call it, demographic makeup while I'm at the event. I really don't. I take photos and I just keep doing my thing. But after the event, when I'm posting pictures, sometimes I just have to laugh at how diverse the crowd is. And it's just funny. It's like, did I just have, like, you know, a lesbian with the lesbian teeth, you know, the shirt with the tie-dye and the Birkenstock with the socks, and like a Muslim lady and like this really conservative lady, all like enjoying the same gun in the port, like waiting on each other, and they back behind the they're behind the lines just gossiping and talking about different things and their experience. Yes, I did. Like, yeah, yes, I did. People that probably wouldn't talk to each other unless they had something in common. And my whole point is, you have a lot in common. It's just the media we consume tries to tell us we don't. It's not that I'm spectacular, I'm doing something great. I just provided them with a place to go that you can see this commonality. And that's all I'm trying to exploit, how great we are as peoples, as in Americans and the citizens. That's what my whole thing is. Quit. It seems to be there's a vested interest in this country to divide us. And I'm trying to reverse that with diversity shoots. And also,
because you could, what's frustrating is that you could take that and put it at any range, essentially. Mm-hmm. You're gonna you would accomplish the same thing, right? You'd find all those people, I guess. Yeah. So it's, we can't fast forward, but it's good to see that you've got momentum going and the 24 planned out. You mentioned breaking bread, and then you mentioned the pizza. So I put a poll up there. Is pizza bread? And the options are yes, under cheese. The another one is kinda, but it's a reach. The next one is maybe technically only. Or the last one is nope, no way. So, I mean, we know there's bread in there, but do you get to count it as bread is the question. So I don't know. I figured that was interesting. I don't think anyone's ever hit that angle before, so we're throwing that one out there for people that are live. If you're listening to this as a podcast, though, you should probably listen to some of Tony's other podcasts. If you're a podcast listener, Tony hosts a bunch of them, or co-hosts a bunch of them, and we all appreciate the likes, thumbs, stars, whatever the heart, whatever the thing is that the platform offers, and then a comment that really helps a lot with the mechanisms, the behind the scenes. For how the podcasts recommend other podcasts, and that's what gets more people listening. So as much as we appreciate the Patreons, the people that financially support what we do, what Tony's doing, the people that participate in those platforms is priceless, so we appreciate both. But we're here to answer questions. I've got one from a while back that'll be the first one today. What caliber should not be in a revolver? And why is it 9mm? But I didn't put that in there. That was part of it. But what caliber should not be in a revolver? I think the longer calibers. That's the only thing. I don't have a problem with revolvers and weird calibers. When you get too long of a bullet, though, then the cylinder just gets so long. It's difficult for the thing to maintain its, like, mechanical, whatever that's called, like, operation, right? Like, it just gets wobbly. And
all of a sudden, like, I posted a picture up of a Thunder 5, and if you're from the 90s or you saw, what was it, Three Kings, the movie with Ice Cube, George Clooney, and I think Mark Wahlberg back in the day, they had that revolver in there in 45-70. Well, once you get a casing that long, you have a very, very, very heavy cylinder, which affects how that trigger pull. You're not going to have a great trigger pull, at least double action, with something that heavy. So, I mean, you can have it. It just doesn't seem like a fun gun to shoot at that point. Like, I fired the Smith & Wesson 500, Smith & Wesson 460s. And pretty much, if you really want to be accurate, that you got to shoot a single action. At least in my opinion. Because compared to a 357 Magnum, a Smith 357 Magnum trigger pull, that thing is long and heavy. At least is what I can remember. So when you start getting into rifle calibers or rifle length calibers, I think that becomes a problem. 9mm, I guess they did it for the same reason they did 45, maybe 45 ACP to supplement something. I mean, originally, maybe.
Right. Or like, we don't want to have to buy a thousand kinds of brands of ammo or types, I guess, calibers of ammo. So let's give the police the revolver and somebody else the semi, and we'll make them both 9mm because they're 38 probably.
Yeah, because and 9mm is more powerful than 38. People don't know that, but it is.
But it's like kind of compromise, like, or at least as a revolver, I assume it was some sort of a compromise. I don't think.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
oh, what we really need is this, because it doesn't give you more rounds. If it gave you more rounds, that'd be one thing, but you still get your whatever number it would be.
It doesn't give you 350. It doesn't give you 357 Magnum power. So what is it? 38 plus P power? No, it had to be a compromise thing. And I mean, not even that great, because you have. Go ahead.
No. Finish up.
Because you have to use I can't think of the word, moon clips. You have to use like moon clips for that.
Rim or whatever.
Yeah, so.
I was just going to say that I have a bunch of different, now that I'm thinking about it, I guess weird caliber revolvers. I have a revolver made in Paris that shoots 25 ACP. And then I've got two different NAAs, one that shoots 17 HMR, and then I've got one that shoots 17 Mach 2. Those are neat because they're 22s that are tapered down, so they look like a little 223, but they're a 22 tapered down to 17. So that's a tiny little hole, right? So they're a tapered, like shouldered cartridge. They look like a 223 going into a thing, and the one is a 22 Magnum, and the other one is a 22 long rifle. So the Mach 2, I think, is the shorter one, is super cool. And that the revolver there is just such a neat concept. And they only made them for a little while, so that was really hard to find. And then I think I have, that's all I have for revolvers. I wouldn't mind getting a 45 ACP revolver just because they're kind of neat. They're kind of big and goofy, but I just like the idea of being able to shoot, you know, 45 out of one. But I'm trying to think. Oh, with that 30 super carry, do you think that would be somebody to make a revolver? So I guess I was talking to the dude from Federal, is it Chris? And that might have come up. And I think the idea is that that's what it's really close, or did he say it was really close to the 32 H&R? But essentially,
oh, really?
It's sort of like, you know, the 32 H&R, I think, comes from Federal also. You know, we've talked about that often. You know, that was sort of because 380 was too little and 9mm guns were too big. And I guess 32 revolvers were too small. 38 revolvers only gave you five shots. So they said, well, what if we put a 32 into a J-frame and give you six shots? So they said, okay, we'll make this 32 H&R kind of a hotter 32. And I'm wondering if something like that with 30 super carry, you know, maybe they give you, I don't know if you could get five rounds of 30 super carry into a J-frame. And I don't know if it's too long, because it is a long.
You mean six rounds or five?
Sorry, six rounds, an extra round, I should say.
Yeah. Should be able to if you can do it with, I mean, if you get five with 9, 30 super carry, slightly smaller diameter, might be able to pull it off.
Yeah, I don't know though, because it's, you know, you get smaller diameter, but then longer, and then, like, you know, so you run into what you were saying with the cylinder. But anyway, that's the only other thing I can think of that's even a modern, or that's developed since the revolvers have all been made. And I can't think of anything else that just seemed like a dumb revolver. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the shotgun revolvers, you know, the Judges and things. I like that Thunder 5. That's separate. But I don't have a problem with them. I mean, buy them all you want. I just don't like them. You know, I just don't want really any of them. I'm not a big fan of the limited, you know, ability of them. But for reasons, and people like them, I mean, I understand them. But I'm not going to shun them or nothing. But I'm trying to think of like a revolver that I've seen that shouldn't have been, or that just seemed dumb. And I can't really think of them, because I don't know. It's kind of like a bolt action, you know. Who really cares if you put something into a revolver as long as it works?
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking just caliber, but if you're talking like some weirdness, like a Matebo, like there's that stuff.
But it didn't shoot a weird caliber, right? It still shot 357 or something.
What's up?
It still what shot happened? A regular caliber, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just talking about the function of it and the weirdness of it that way. And, I mean, I just find it all unique. To me, it's all unique.
So celebrated. Although it's saying no high pressure in revolvers for me, say over 50,000 K. Whatever pound PSI.
Yeah.
308 would be silly with a gap. Loud flinch. I agree on 4572, unless you had a reason. May as well do an SBR if you want to do a 4570 revolver. Well, I think the 4570 revolver is just because it's 410, you know, and they figured, I think they made it as 410. And then someone said, hey, if we make this thing solid enough, then we can do both. I don't think that
more than likely. You know, I mean,
unless what do you call it? Recoil junkies that just said, no, make it just because we want to shoot it, not because it's needed for anything. I just want to shoot it.
Well, you started getting up in there with 4.54 Casull, and you know, it just got ridiculous the more you went on. I remember, because I don't know what the PSI is for M1 carbine, 30 carbine, because that was the first I remember of something that was not a pistol cartridge in a revolver. I think Freedom Arms did it. I think.
Well, Freedom Arms definitely made big guns before, big revolvers before other people came along and started doing it.
Yeah, Freedom Arms. I just remember ordering their catalog and just leafing through it and let my little imagination run wild. Because these guns were like $1,200 to $1,500 30, 40 years ago.
So Aldo is saying that, and I haven't heard of all this, Magnum Research makes the BFR in 30-30 Winchester, 350 Legend, 360 Buckhammer, 444 Marlin, 450 Marlin, 45 Colt, 410, 4570 Government, 460 Smith & Wesson Magnum, and 500 Smith & Wesson Magnum. I've heard of all of those. I didn't know about the 30-30. Now that I think about it, I've seen some 30 carbine revolvers before, too. But a 30-30...
Yeah. BFR took over.
That might be kind of neat. I'm thinking for, like, hunting sheep or something, where you're climbing up a giant hill, and you don't really want to take a giant rifle, but you need a rifle, kind of, because you're going to be shooting a long ways, and you got to get a sheep. I think that might be kind of neat. I'm a big fan of 30-30 anyway, so if you're going to carry your lever action and then carry that, that might be kind of a neat thing. Although that's a huge gun.
Yeah, exactly. When you really get into, because I know what you mean. I went through a phase where I tried to pick up every book and read every article online about handgun hunting and why you want to do it. But really, when you get into rifle caliber revolvers like the BFR, you're still talking about a 5, 6, 7, 6 pound pistol. When you can probably get one of the lighter weights rifles and probably come in about that, you know, about 7 pounds, which is a big difference between 5 and 7.
Well, I think there's also an element besides just like the stats. I think there's, you know, like let's say it's your 13th hunt and, you know, you've got 12 with that or 10 with that rifle and then a couple with a bow. And now you're looking, you know, you want to do something different. You know.
Yep. It's more of a skill level because you still have to get closer. You still don't have that powder burn. So, yeah. It's greater. Yeah, it's greater distance than a bow, but not so great a difference distance as a rifle.
When I
so was now you got to work on your stalking and your camouflage.
When I was a kid, my uncle hunted way more than anybody else. And I can remember as I grew up, when I was a little kid, he hunted like a regular person with a rifle and he'd go out hunting in the truck and everything. And then I'd say by the time I was in high school, he was to ultralight bow hunting, stalking, and lots of optics and creeping right up on critters. Because essentially, once you know how to do what you can do, you want to challenge yourself. And, you know, subsequent years and years and years, he'd, you know, he'd get to where, again, he got down to a bow and arrow because he didn't like shooting with rifles. It was, you know, he had already done that. Essentially, it was, you know, like going backwards. He wanted to get more skill involved or more interest, you know, more tough. So I thought that was kind of, you're going to have that, I suppose, with all, or at least you have that potential with a lot of hunters, especially because this was back east where there was a lot of critters. So I think you probably, you know, it's not like, although saying I'd pick up a 4-pound rifle in titanium with carbon fiber barrel in 6.5 in 6.5 to 300. Does that mean 6.5 or 300 with scope or 26 or 27 Nosler over a BFR? Well, I've been watching Bullets for Bucks, and he does a lot of stuff with these rifles. And a lot of times he's comparing like a rifle that you take to a match versus a rifle you take hunting. And there's the differences, obviously, in the weights and the designs of them and stuff. But I don't know. I'd have to. I haven't played with a bolt action in so long. Do you play with bolt actions when you go to shows? Do you shoot them?
Did you drop off? Hello?
Huh? I'm asking, do you, when you go to shows, do you check out bolt actions? Do you shoot them and stuff when you go to ranges and things?
Bolt actions? Nope. I'm thinking about it. Like, when was the last time? Like, so the bolt actions I do check out are more modern. Like the Sig Cross, like when that came out, I checked it out. Like the more modern bolt actions, folding stock, 16-inch barreled. Definitely I checked out the 8.6 Blackout bolt action. So, yeah, the more modern ones. Traditional ones, not so much.
So I'm trying to think. I've been doing some stuff with bolt actions online on the internet, but I haven't picked up one. I don't remember last time I picked one up. I don't think I picked one up for years. So not that I have anything against them. I just haven't walked over to one and picked one up or anything. Back in the shop and stuff, I would deal with them. But I know where my, whatever you call it, my awareness is. So if somebody wanted to look at it, I know how to pick it up off the wall and show it to them. You know, and I could offer some assistance on how to work it. But as soon as they had any kind of question, I would wait for somebody who knew what they were doing to be free and direct them over to that person, because I just never had much brain capacity for them.
Well, for me, I mean, because I have a Savage Axis 30-06, but it kicked my butt so thoroughly, I don't even like mess with it. It's sitting in the corner right now looking at me like, why don't you take me somewhere? You'll never take me out. I'm like, no, I do not. But for me, bolt actions are surplus rifles in my mind. Like, those are the ones with the personalities for me. Because it has that, you know, depends on what it is. Like my Mosins, they are World War II, Finnish continuation war type Mosins. One was from 1899. So to me, they have stories when I'm messing with bolt actions. My Enfield was World War I. To me, that's different than picking up a modern Monte Carlo stocked composite bolt action. Oh, actually, yeah, I'm thinking traditional, but I realized something. Yeah, Things like the Ruger series of both actions. What are they called? The American rifle.
Ruger American ranches. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I think those are interesting too. So, yeah, never mind. I do pick them up, and I do tactically fondle them. I was thinking of like
more like the hunting lightweight ones. Both actions.
Yeah. Like Christensen arms and things like that. And I'm like, yeah, those I don't look at, but yeah, some of the more modern stuff. Yes, I do. I do check it out because I think it's interesting, especially when we're talking like something that feeds from a 5.56, like a Stanag mag. I think for a state like Jersey, where you never know overnight what they'd ban, to be able to have the ability to use something like that and run it and have that option, I think it's great. You never know what legislation will pass in the middle of the night and still have the ability to throw intermediate rounds downrange relatively quickly with low recoil.
That's interesting. Aldo saying, I love Finnish Mosins too, Tony. My first was M44 imported from Ukraine from Solidar Salt Mine Arsenal. UA? So is that United? No. UA Solidar. No. What is UA?
In what way did he use UA?
Oh, it says Solidar Salt Mine Arsenal, UA Solidar in mid 2000s. So I don't know if that's the name of the Arsenal. Oh, you is Ukraine. Okay. Some of the arsenals, or what do you call them? Yeah, arsenals that the, I think that's what you'd call them, the bulk guns that were put up by the Russians in Ukraine as cold storage or whatever. And then once they broke off into Russia's, right, just like that movie, once they broke off, they started selling off all that stuff the Russians didn't own anymore. So I'm assuming that's what he means. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a quick turnaround, easy money, man. They qualified. They came in the States in huge numbers. Like my Finn, like I got a Tika. It's just the story behind it because you know these firearms are used. There was nothing that was made and then stuck in storage because these countries are actually fighting for their very existence. So if you have a Mosin that was made in the 40s, more than likely that thing was in someone's hands one time or another and sending rounds downrange. Don't know which side, but somebody was shooting it. And the Finns actually upgraded the Mosins over what the Russians did. They mine has like, they free-floated the front end with cork. They smoothed out the insides, the trigger. I mean, I've shot it in competition. I also have a Russian Mosin, and the Finn Mosin is just much better. And it's a regular Mosin. It is not even one of the M series, the shorter ones, which I wanted them. But when I got into Mosins, it was like a Mosin, because it was early. It was early in the online thing, and I didn't see a lot of Finn Mosins, and to be able to see the difference between the shorter Mosins and the quality of how good they are was different. Now I wish I would have picked up a bunch of them because, you know, they were like $150 back then.
My first Mosins were under 50. I had a friend that imported them, and I helped him on his doing some stuff. So, he never charged me more than a couple of bucks for them anyway. And so that first original price, because I started buying them from him probably in the mid-90s, and he just always charged me that under $50 price. And he had racks and racks of them. Their story, though, was that during Vietnam, the U.S. government had put a bounty on Mosins and any gun really, and the Mosins though were ones that were collected and then sold as scrap or sold for resale, and they could be brought over anyway. He ended up with them, but they were essentially from Vietnam, a collected by South Vietnamese, brought back as a bounty, like $5 or something, he said. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of them had essentially like this little ring in the trigger guard. And he told me that those were the cooler ones because those were the ones that were set up as booby traps and they were taken, you know, taken down as a booby trap for the bounty. But some motherfucker put that thing up there with a little band around the trigger and then a tripwire. Walk past it and get a, you know, a 7654R into your beam and taken down for the bounty. So the bounty got the guns out of the theater, but it also accomplished that. So I didn't get one of those. He wanted to keep those separate. He wouldn't let me buy those. But or maybe I did. I can't even remember. I'm gonna have to go look. But that was the story of ours. They were bounties from Vietnam. So not only did I not pay much for them, but of course I'm never gonna sell them because they're amazing. Plus, I gave them to all my. I mean, everybody I know had them back in the day when it's still under $50 was probably like saying $100 today, right? I mean, this is in the 90s or something. But it was still at a time when I was making enough money and I didn't care. So, I mean, everybody I knew that was into guns, like, here, have a Mosin or two. You know, it's another gun that we can go shoot. And 54R didn't cost nothing. It still doesn't. Well, I don't know what it costs.
Nothing.
But back then, it costs nothing. People didn't like to shoot it that much because it kicks so much. And these were ugly guns. I mean, by no means are these you're paying $100 for. These are guns that were coming out of trees in Vietnam. But that's how cool they were. But anyway, so that's my, and then he had a bunch of other ones. But after that, I'm like, yeah, I don't want no Nagant that's been in an arsenal somewhere. Like you say, they do have history to them, but I knew the history of ours and I just, I'm okay with mine. Although since I have a couple of more Mosins that are specimens, but mostly because of the bayonets, I bought them so that they'd hold the bayonets that I had on them.
It's just, to me, it's that story. It's the fact that it was used. It's the fact that it's been there. Like, that to me is really important over the overall mission of a firearm. It's like, no. This thing was used to defend home and hearth. And I just thought that was really cool. And then when you find out the little things about, like, the Finnish gun, was it with the National Army, or wish it was with the local militia. You know what I mean? Like who used it? Were these the 18-year-olds that were in the regular army, or was it like the 40-year-olds that had did their time, but now were coming back as militia dudes? Like all of that is part of it. And then to hear about this Vietnam thing, I'm like, oh, that's just so cool.
Well, and then all those bringing up the Remington. I did one of the ones I bought for real money was a Remington. I have a Nagant made here in the U.S. by Remington.
Nice. Because Remington and Winchester made, didn't they?
I don't honestly remember. I know that it's made in the U.S. I think it's Remington. It could be Winchester because, you know, they're interchangeable to some extent unless I'm actually thinking about it. But I'm more interested in Bannerman, or I'm as interested in Bannerman. And Bannerman had bought a bunch of those and then tried to turn them into 30-06 or something. So, and it didn't work. Some people say it did. So I don't think mine is like that, but mine is in that, you know, it's that made in the U.S. era or whatever. Now, the thing is, did those, because I think the ones that were made in the U.S. weren't bought by Russia, but then were bought by somebody else. So thing about those, just because, you know, we're talking all the different versions of the Nagant, it's made in the U.S., like not bought by the country that ordered them and then dispersed. Did they go get used and then come back, or was this thing just bouncing around, you know, Ohio for the last 200 years? I don't know how long it's been around, you know, but like that kind of thing, like how do you figure that kind of stuff out, or how do you even, when you're going and shooting it, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you get to think about with, well, specifically, well, Nagant. You know, a lot of guns, that's the fun part about it too.
Exactly. So I go to the military arms shoot here in Jersey, and you stumble across it. What happened was I'm taking this Winchester. I don't know why. Could be Remington. Sorry. I'm driving and not looking it up like the proper gun geek. But they produced a buttload of them for the Russian military, and the government got overthrown. Well, they're not going to get them. So now what do you do? Because a significant amount of money and time went into it. and you don't want one of America's, you know, premium firearms manufacturers going out of business because, well, they're not going to get paid for this large order of Mosin and Nagant. So the U.S. government purchased them. But now what do you do with them? Because it's not even like they're a common caliber in America. So they held on to them, I think, for a little bit and then immediately sold them a surplus for like $5. And that's when you got a lot of Mosins that have been sporterized and everything else. And still you have it 7.62x54R, which is like 0.312 or 0.311 caliber. So as close as you got is like 303 British, I think, is near that.
Yeah, but it was a caliber that you could get the gun, but nobody had that ammo laying around. You couldn't reload that ammo. That wasn't a thing, really. So, yeah, you're trying to rechamber it into something, right?
Yep, and that's where you got a bunch of weirdness, and at least it was made in America, so you wasn't. It should have been made to a standard that might have been better than what Soviet standard might have been in the day, as far as metallurgy and quality control. But you still had a gun.
Sorry, I'm interrupting. I'm reading Aldo's comment here. He says he's telling us some information about them, and he followed up with, "I'm a semi-expert on Mosin history. Many Americana and Russian books on them, full armors, tool set for them too." And that made me think that the most concise thing I've seen on the Mosins is the New Jersey Collectors Club. We've talked about that one before, but there's a club in New Jersey, and they meet up occasionally, and they'll bring their collections, the assembled collection for the Mosin. I think it was like two or three episodes because there's so much going on with Mosins. But I think they did one for Russians specifically, and then they did like others. I might be confusing it with one of their AK ones, but they did a pretty decent. I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of fancy videos where millionaires. Fucking millionaires who make fucking YouTube videos and everybody knows about those. But the regular people who actually give a shit about the stuff and have done the research and are, you know, reading books and retaining the knowledge and aren't just trying to prepare videos to make $1 million, those are stuff I like to watch because those are people that figured it out, got the information from wherever they bought it from, and then are now presenting it to other collectors. So I think that that's probably the most recent and most maybe the most thorough one I've seen. I know we talked about it on this show or what, but I know we linked to it maybe 2 years ago, somewhere in the past here, but I'm sure you can find it. Is it the New Jersey Gun Collectors Club? Is it that easy? Or is it something?
It's damn close. Yeah, I've been to the events. That's who hosts the events for us. And I've gone to, dude, it is so cool to be in a room with that group of nerds. Because they know it all. Like, they know all the intricate parts of the story. And they have them laid out. They have them laid out according to arsenal, country of origin. And it's 100% worth it. If you live in Jersey, because they host it every month. They host an event every month in Kenilworth. At Kenilworth at the VFW. And I'm talking about it's worth going to every month, and I don't think I've been to one in 6 months. But it was awesome, too.
And well, I haven't seen a video in a while, so they might not have had them in a while.
Okay. Because I get emails from Stanley all the time, who runs the organization. And I've been going, I guess. I started their shoots 10 years ago? When I only had the Mosins and the SKS. And definitely worth going to. Definitely worth checking out.
Is that me or is it Tony?
Give me a second. I might have fallen off because I'm going to.
Yeah, you're probably between channels. So Aldo just said Mosin Museum is a neat channel. He's out west in Wyoming or Colorado or something like that. And I just looked at it. I'm going to bring it on the screen over here, I guess. I just looked at it, and it is looks pretty cool on first glance. Here we go. That's cool. YouTube channel is just it's a YouTube channel or whatever. But I'm like, what? A museum? And then went to their website. It's a virtual museum. So I'm digging that. Just by no means the first, even for Mosins, but I always like to see people who put some effort into putting present some information about something they've researched and trying to archive. However long it exists, the internet remembers. So putting information like this on the internet is epic. It'll be there forever. You can go back and find some of the original stuff, the first people that put their gun pictures online. And yeah, it's awesome to see people still doing this. So I'm going to dig into this. Mosins aren't my number one thing, but they're so adjacent to AKs that, you know, I'm still going to pay attention to them. And I happen to own a crap load of them because they were so cheap.
Yeah, and I think that was the good part. That was a good part about Mosins. It allowed you to get into collecting very inexpensively, but you had such a wide variety of firearms and countries and models that you could get for less than $200. I mean, at one time, Soviet sniper rifle, snipers, Mosins were like $250. And that was before it was worth it for people to, you know, make counterfeit ones.
I can't
burning pure gasoline.
That's funny because when you're talking about that, I can remember counterfeit Thompsons for sure, Stens, or not Stens, but that other thing, the Sterling. And then I've seen counterfeit, like, just like the weirdest things, like little 22s half the time. Nowadays, it'd be a Turkish shotgun inside all there. But back in the day, they'd somehow cram a, you know, I don't know, like a some kind of semi-auto 22 into it. And then they'd wrap it up to look like all these different things. Or you, I don't think they were kits. I think they were just companies that sprouted up to sell them like that.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, somebody had some kind of gas leak. I don't know what was going on. Their car was spewing out. I swear, it smelled like I was behind a gas truck.
Once all the cars are electric, we won't have to deal with that anymore.
I couldn't make this trip in one day.
What'll happen is, you remember slot cars? When you're racing as a little kid, slot cars, that's what'll happen. The electric cars will still be electric. They'll just add an electric slot down the middle of the road. Those little yellow things in the middle of the road will be little slots. They'll just poke down in there to recharge once as you're driving. And it'll steer
for you. As you're driving. Because I'm laughing. I'm like, this trip would have, in an electric car, depends on how what the range would have taken. At least I'd be doing the show from my electronic plug-in. So I had to recharge for the return trip to Trent.
Or they could just have, like, on a cable car, they just have them cords hanging above the highways everywhere, and you'll just have, like, a broomstick going up there to connect to get you charged.
Oh, wow, they have my road closed off. Well, good.
That's always fun. Do you drive with the robot telling you where to go?
No.
I get so used to that, especially when I don't know where I'm going, of course, but now I do it even when I know where I'm going, mainly because the robots know when there's an accident or whatever, and they'll tell you, like, hey, there's an accident. Do you want me to reroute you? And then it'll give you, like, three options to reroute. You can go, okay, I want to go this way. So I've been running with the robots more and more. I imagine people probably in the new cars have the robot guidance systems right in their cars.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking right now, I'm trying to make my mind up whether I'm going to rent a vehicle and drive down to Kevin Dixie's training line this year because it's in Atlanta, or whether I'm going to fly down. I'm trying to work my way through the agita of flying with a firearm.
I say drive for sure.
Yeah, but that's a lot of hours. It's one's a lot of hours, but the other one is, hey, I get to drive. And I'm not afraid of driving because it's just to Atlanta. I mean, that's not a horrific drive, in my opinion.
No, that sounds like I dig it. I would do it if I could.
Yeah, thing is, I have to rent a vehicle.
What vehicle, I suppose. But pretty much those SUVs are mostly economical, but they're still within range. Or at least last time I looked, probably at SHOT Show or something. I think we might have been.
It's like $700. $700 to rent it for a few days and have a nice vehicle. I'm down there. We can drive from point A to point B because you're still in a rural area. I mean, you know, and my whole thing is like, yeah, let's go, but let's do this. I want to be able to go places once we get down there so we can go get something to eat. And it also helps with the fellowship of it all. You know, because a lot of people are going to fly and they're going to need rides, and why not give them one? Now you're hanging out with somebody you've never met before, but you're all at this thing in Atlanta for Kevin Dixie. I don't know. I just find the fellowship of all things better. Like make it experience. You know, you go to a firearms training class, meet and hang out with the people. Don't be one of those people that go to the class and then can't wait to get away from everyone. Enjoy the entire experience. At least that's
well, I've hosted, I guess, a lot of classes when the shop would host instructors. You know, my gig was I didn't have to do nothing. I would just hang out with everybody. But, you know, I got to observe everything. And I hear what you're saying. A lot of times, though, it's like, you know, you're doing everything you could possibly do to cut time to get to that event. And then, you know, your other obligations in life that you're putting on hold are like filling up the dam while you're at that class. So you got to bust out of there right after and just, you know, start treading water to get everybody happy again. And I've seen that happen. And that's frustrating. But, you know, then you have to make the decision. Is it worth, you know, experiencing it and missing all the other extra stuff, which is, I agree with you 1,000%. And that's where it's frustrating when people don't know that there's stuff to miss and they just go like, oh, it's over and they leave. It's like, oh, wait, dude, we should have said stick around. You know, we started to make a point of letting people know like, hey, bring a lunch, because the people that book out of there for lunch are wasting their time. Like if you bring a lunch, then everybody can just sit around eating together. And that's another extra hour or two, however long, you know, depending on how far away lunches are, I suppose, you know, it might be some amount of time. And that's usually time with the instructor, because rarely do instructors leave, you know, the range or whatever. But some people, they don't, you know, think about that, and they book out of there to go get a Subway sandwich. And was it really worth that Subway sandwich?
No, because you missed the chance to actually talk about what belt do you use? What holster do you use? What ammo? Who's your guy for ammo? Who's just things like that. Or like you said, you're talking to the instructor. Hey, I always had a question about doing this, or what if I do this? And you're not taking away from anyone's class time.
Yeah, exactly. It's off the clock. Exactly. And now you hear their opinion on, oh yeah, that news story, or everybody's, you know, some joke, and now you're come back. The worst is people that come back and they missed an inside joke or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And the rest like the people with the ice cubes, and then everybody starts laughing, and whoever went to lunch and got this like, what?
I don't get it. And that's 45 gap.
Okay, let's get back there. So Plain Nut said Tony a reminder. He forgot about the guys in the club, and it looks like their meetings are on his days off, so that's cool. We have succeeded in helping out someone get united with the collectors club. Awesome. So this one was from way earlier, but I started. So Aldo is saying, hey all, I have a question. I got a second M6 Scout. Now I have two. A 22 long rifle and a 22 Hornet. For survival, what 22 Hornet load would you use? In a pinch, which would work for deer? Not that I would. I don't know nothing about Hornet. I didn't even know there is different Hornet. I mean, I have Hornet in my collection, but I don't know enough about Hornet to know there's a range or anything. So do you know anything about it?
No, not at all. Not for 22 Hornet. And, I mean, I thought it was pretty cool that he's got another M6 Scout. So now he's got two. That's pretty cool. No, I don't. I apologize. It just sucks because I don't know anything about loading for 22 Hornet.
Yeah, like I said, I've had a bunch because they look cool. They look kind of like a bottle of champagne. They look weird. You know, they're a big they look kind of like a 38 that bottlenecks down, you know, but a curvy bottleneck. It looks like a bottle of wine, I think, if I'm remembering it right. Down to a 22. So it's this big fat 38 down to a 22. So it looks super interesting. But I think, are they a revolver load or am I crazy? I think they can be put into a revolver also. But
yeah,
these are 410 slash, well, these are rifle shotgun combos. So there are 22 on top and a 410 underneath, right? And one of them is a 22 long rifle and the other one is a 22 Hornet. I think that's how it goes. And yeah, that's the thing. I guess a Hornet could probably take out a deer. It's all about if you can sneak up on the thing or not, right? So I mean, sitting up in a tree and putting some grain on the ground and it walks up and you shoot it straight down or something, like, you know, that's a different story than trying to shoot it across a 200-yard meadow or whatever.
Yeah, it's not like this thing.
Or trapping it, putting it out of its misery with the 22 Hornet, right? Once you've already trapped it or squished it with a rock or something.
You know, yeah, it's not like it's going to have a great trigger on it on an M6.
But I think realistically that was, I don't know what they were thinking with some of that, like give a pilot a rifle, like I guess from World War One or Two when you could get lost somewhere. But, you know, now we live with either a QRT. So if you're doing something, most people that are doing something have, they're not doing it alone. They've got some kind of support. So there's either a quick response team or there's some kind of, they know the cavalry can come if necessary. So, you know, most, that's how most things happen nowadays. So I just don't know if that's in how small the world is compared to how big the world used to be. I think, you know, nobody's, in other words, well, I don't think there's too many stories where pilots go down and they have to, you know, kill large animals for food to survive. Like they're usually just sitting there for a minute until somebody shows up and gets them, right?
Well, some of that stuff was also for crews for B-52s and transport aircraft that would go and be in weird places because of the range, you know?
Right, like back in the old days, there was only another B-52 could even get there because nothing had enough gas to get to wherever you were remotely, yeah.
And the same thing with transports.
Because as soon as I think of like Africa or the jungles of South America, I should probably shut up because that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, it's a whole nother world.
Yeah.
But it's still a cool thought process because, I mean, really, we say, oh, well, that was then, but then wasn't that long ago. You know, then the 60s weren't that long ago, the 70s weren't that long ago, because they still had these things and they were going for lightweight with a lot of it because it goes out on the ejection seat with you.
New York Outcast is saying that according to Google, deer have repeatedly been taken with the 22 Hornet in the past. I know back in the old days, like our grandfather's generation, they didn't have giant rifles and bullets and stuff, so they were definitely doing everything with, you know, 30-30 and less, pretty much, right? Like, except for 45-70 or something, they, or I guess huge rifles, but I don't think they, anyway, I think they were definitely making do with what they had back in the day.
Well, back, you know, where I'm from, Virginia, you had the part of Virginia I'm from, hunting with shotgun. It was not really legal for you to use centerfire rifles to hunt deer because it's so flat comparatively.
And you didn't need it. I mean, obviously it was working. People could use buckshot or slug and get the deer. So you didn't need anything crazier than that. I think now it's more of, you know, I want to shoot from far away, or I guess it's far away, really. There's only reason to have something that's super huge, unless you're shooting a caribou or one of them giant things. Wait, what's bigger, a caribou or a moose? I've never seen a caribou except for in movies, so I've only seen mooses. And I don't think I've seen a giant moose. I've only seen regular sized moose. Tony's muted, though. I'm going to say what Aldo was saying about the M7. Was a rifle made in night. Wait, is it an M7? I have it unstarred now. Tony, you're muted, so if you're saying stuff, we're not hearing it. M6 Scout. Okay, sorry. Am I mixing it up with an M7? So the M6 Scout was a rifle made in 1952 and served aboard the B-52 and B-58 bombers. Their planned XB-70 nuclear bombers so that they could fly and drop nukes on Russia and then survive until picked up in Russia or evade back to friendly nations. Okay. So almost like for a specific purpose. Okay. Moose are bigger? Okay. I don't care about
Yeah, I didn't know what you... Go ahead. Yeah, I didn't know what you heard. Yeah, moose are bigger. And yeah, cool. I just got out of my vehicle and I left my keys to the house inside, so I had to go back out. All right, here we go.
All right, we're back to questions again. Another one says, what do you think of the Arms Corps M200, Affordable Freedom? So do you know that one off the top of your head?
The revolver, the M200?
The Arms Corps
M200. I think, yeah. The M200 is their 38 revolver.
Yeah.
Yeah, you run it, it's good to go. I mean, see... Sometimes, because I was thinking about this, because I'm going to ask them for one, for the diversity shoots. And the reason being, when we have another run on guns, name brand stuff is the first thing to disappear. And then you end up with Arms Corps revolvers. You end up with the EAA, what is it, Windicator. And people need to know if that's good gun. They need to know whether it's decent. And I think it'll be a good thing for me to have a couple at diversity shoots. A couple off-name brands that doesn't get a lot of play on YouTube. Or, you know, the guy who's showing it on YouTube doesn't have much experience reviewing guns or don't put a lot of rounds through them. So I think it'll be a good thing for me to have one and we study, give it a study diet ammo.
Where are they at?
See how it holds up.
What is their price point?
I think it's like between like around three to four.
Let's see. So it's a pullback like a Colt, right? So to release the cylinder, you pull it back like a Colt. That bothers me. So it's annoying. And then I don't know about the grip angle. Well, I like push buttons better for whatever reason. I like going forward. Because you have to, for me, and I'm not used to it, maybe it's just because I got big hands, so I never have to really reposition my hands. But on a Colt, I got to reposition my hand to open a revolver, you know. I guess they want you to. They figure you're gonna. But I don't like being mandatory on how I got to open my revolver, you know. Anyway, so that's, first off, not a big thing for me. But then the grip angle looks almost Beasley to me. So I haven't shot one or picked it up, but it just looking at it, it looks like a... more vertical than I guess other guns, or it's just the way the grips are on them. You know, I don't know. I haven't picked it up. You've shot them though?
As if you're, no, I haven't shot that.
Oh, okay.
But my whole thing is, I think if we're gun enthusiasts, if we're the gun guy in our circle, it's cool to be a well-rounded gun guy. I mean, it's great. You know how Smith works and you know, as cheap as I get is a Ruger. Well, maybe you should check out the other stuff. At least you can have an educated opinion on it. If you want to. If you don't, that's cool too. I'm just saying it'd be nice to know.
Yeah, and me not liking the cylinder thing is me. Because somebody who opens it different than me will probably hate a button. Like, what is it? Ruger has a button? Because you know, you got to have some finger strength there. Or thumb strength, and that can be difficult when you're trying to hold the right, you know, the revolver and all that. And then, you know, the Smith, which I prefer, just a little push thing. Some people hate that because it, you know, they insist that it rides on their holster and opens all the time or something. So, you know, we all are different. But you, how you know? By picking it up and fiddling with it or going shooting it or whatever. mm-hmm. maybe even buying it and deciding you don't like it and trading it in. You know, you're allowed to do that.
So that's why I'm checking out things like SAR, because SAR, SAR, Turkish company, they also make revolvers. They have the SAR 9, which I think a few people know. They make their CZ-75 clone, and they also have this revolver they have that I checked out at the Great American Outdoor Show with a 6-inch barrel. I think it's like the M38 or something like that, SAR M38. To me, it's worth looking at things like that. Rossi has a revolver. Check it out. Because again, when we have an ammo apocalypse, or you know, all the guns are snatched up, and your cousin who's never in the guns call you and go, "Hey man, I'm at the gun store and all they have is, you know, this thing from EAA or this thing from Rock Island. Should I buy it? Is it worth it?" At least you'll know, because you shot it a little bit and you know the ups and the downs. Or sometimes people will find that and you can't explain to them why they need to spend more than $300 on a brand new revolver. Like, no matter what you say, you can't convince them that if someone sells a $300 revolver, why in the heck would you buy a $1,200 revolver? Guns are good.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could do the car thing, you know, like the difference between a cheap car and a medium car. And I don't know the cars enough to know the brands to put in the mix here, but, you know, a cheap one, a medium one, and a Porsche or a fancy one or whatever, fancy cars, Mercedes or something.
Nope. Some do, but some just don't want to hear it. And it's like, okay.
Well, no, but then there's some people that are like, yeah, well, I don't care about cars either. So,
you know, yeah, so for exactly. that
reason, I'm going to buy the cheap car. And you're like, okay, well, then know what you're doing. Like, then don't complain when you don't see the performance of the, you know, because that's the main thing is that people, mm-hmm. if they want to buy cheap,
they're going to justify buying cheap. And this is for me, tactically thrifty dude. But I know. It's not going to be just as good. Don't be angry at me when you discover how not just as good it is. Because I'm not mature enough to walk around life not saying I told you so. If you're looking for that level of maturity, I'm not that dude. All right, there you go. Just got back online. So I'm checking out. Kind of, but it's a reach. There you go. Get this poll out of my way so I can see what's on. Here you go. Am I the only one on? Is G not being heard? Think he might have dropped off. You guys let me know in the chat if you're hearing G or if you're hearing just myself, because I'm seeing only me talking. Real quick, guys. All right, cool. All right, let me go ahead and then, since it's the Tony show now. Yeah, cool. So one thing about revolvers or inexpensive guns, I think we should know it if we're going to be the gun person. If we're going to be that gun guy at work, we should at least run some rounds through one, even if it takes just going to rent one. Or you can start your own inexpensive gun collection, picking up things like the SAR 9, picking up things like, I think it was called the Rock Island. Rock Island makes a Glock clone, but it's aluminum frame Glock clone. I think it's called like the Striker 2000 or something like that. So one of my guys has it at our diversity shoots. It's an okay gun. It's not great, but it's okay. And I think that's what you'll find with a lot of these things, like the T-Sauce. T-Sauce makes one, the P9, I think it is. And it's a 9mm Striker fired handgun. that takes Glock 226 mag, I mean, excuse me, SIG 226 mags, has Glock sights, works in an XD holster, and it's made in Turkey, but for around $300, you have a Strikerfied gun with sights that you can pick up anywhere, with mags you can pick up anywhere, and runs with a pick rail that you can put stuff on, and has a common outline that can be used with modern holsters. So is it just as good? Probably not. I don't know anybody's put a high round count through these. Actually, I saw one video guy put 3,000 rounds through it, which is pretty darn good. And he said he didn't have many problems with it, but understand you don't, that it is not a Glock. It is not an HK. It is a T-Sauce out of Turkey, and you got a good deal for what you got. So I think it's incumbent upon us as gun people, if you want to be educated about inexpensive guns, to be able to give people at least good advice on them. I mean, if you're telling me you only have $300 or $350 to spend on a firearm, on a handgun, and you're going to carry it, or you're going to have it for home defense, I tell you, get a police trade-in Glock, Smith & Wesson, something like that first. That would be my first stop. Second stop, if you want to get something new, pick up one of these types of guns that I just described. And I think that's a good start. Because why not? I think that's a great way to go. All right, what else? Yep. Rock Island and the Arms Corps are both inexpensive to use. I think training, regardless of what you do, is good, because most modern guns are pretty much based on either Strikerfire Glock or a Browning system. So the mag release is going to be about in the same place. The slide release is going to be in about the same place. And I don't think there's a lot of difference between, because form follows function at this point. They figured it out. It's not like in the beginning, when you were had all kinds of different firearms out there. I think they mostly work about the same. It's getting the safety on and off. That's about the only difference.
Okay, sorry for leaving you hanging there. I have a bad internet tube. So
that's all right.
I was trying to do a thing for, are you paying attention to Professor Yamane is doing a 7-week webinar, his course at Wake Forest University, like a scaled down version of it, he's offering for free starting on Monday. So I did a quick video before this to talk about that, and I think it was like 6 minutes in, it glitched like this, and the video is like 4 minutes long because it took me 4 minutes to come back on and end it.
Oh, no, I didn't know, because I keep an eye on them, kind of. I follow them on X, and I haven't seen anything on IG from them in a while. I thought it was crazy because he was quoting me in his class, which I thought was cool and weird. I mean, he tagged me in it to let me know, but I just thought it was really, really cool and really humbling. And I try to follow him because we have the same, you know, philosophy that it's important to introduce everybody to handguns on their terms if you can. You don't have to make someone into a conservative Republican to get them to understand that, you know, this is a self-defense tool that's neither evil nor good. It's a thing.
I think he's got a pretty good view. Like, he's paying attention to a good spectrum of people to draw from. So it'll be interesting. It's a bit of a obligation because it's 7 weeks every Monday, but then I think it's a couple of hours. So it'll end up being quite a bit of data. It's all recorded, though. So while it's live and after the pre-recorded part gets shared, there's a Q&A. So that's the incentive for being there for the live part. It's all recorded, so you can watch it after the fact as a thing to watch. So you know, it's going to be available for everybody. So anyway, it's just going to be an interesting thing. I don't think closest thing I can think of is maybe the things that happen at SHOT Show, the SHOT Show universities, they call them, or something like that. And those have been happening since at least 2008. It's the first time I went to one, and I think they were happening before that. And those are kind of like up training or skill building development for people in the industry for different aspects of it. Or like the one that Maj did was, you know, to, I guess, create it was training, I guess. It was to offer insight, I guess that's what I'm looking for. It was that specific one was for gun shops and how to reach bigger audiences, be more aware of what, I guess, experience a gun shop. So anyway, those things that happen at SHOT Show, and those don't get recorded, like, except for that one. Was I streaming it from the back? I usually do stuff like that. So, you know, I think it's being, I wasn't to bother because I think it was being, you guys were like producing it for Maj, like whoever was doing it, I'm pretty sure from up front. And you get a mic.
Yeah, I think, if I remember, I think somebody was recording
it. But in any case, very few of those things get. So this will be the first of its kind, is something that live on this topic and available afterward. It'll be cool. So even if it isn't 100% perfect or, you know, 100% inclusive of everything that needs to be brought up, it's a foundation, a starting place, you know, a beginning place, one of beginning places maybe, but, you know, a thing to start from. So it's cool. I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes. He said it was open to 500 people, and he's already got 350 people signed up.
So, oh, really? How much is it?
Free, 100% free. It's just the time obligation. You don't have to read nothing. He has like reading lists for each one, and then he says you don't have to read it. Like you're not gonna lose anything if you don't read the stuff ahead of time. It's just that if you want more, read the stuff ahead of time, and then you show up, you watch the thing, and then there's a Q&A after. But with 350 people, imagine who's signing up for this. I'm thinking the Q&A is going to be epic. I'm hoping, like, pretty cool. It's possible with 350 people, it'll be a bunch of weird, boring Q&A, but I don't think so. I kind of feel like whoever's going to sign up for something like this is either gives a shit or, you know, is it, I don't want to say advanced level, but like, you know, paying attention to where they're going to ask like real questions in there. But if I'm wrong and it's a bunch of people who are brand new to guns, then okay, I'll shut up and I'll watch and see how that happens, because that'll still be awesome, right? That's a massive accomplishment. Either way, in other words, right? If it's a bunch of 2A advocates that show up, win. And if it's a bunch of new people that show up, win. I guess the only way it's a lose is if the only people that showed up were Mom's Demand and they just ruin it or something, fart the whole time or act weird.
Yeah. Because that's one of the things I picked up on at Kevin Dix's Train and Learn last year's training line, they brought in new people and asked them about what they look for in firearms content online. And it's like, when do you get a chance to do that? You know what I mean? When do you get a chance to actually talk to the new gun? I don't even know you call them enthusiasts, but they're interested in firearms, but they haven't pulled the trigger on a lot of guns. They have a low experience. But if you want to appeal to them, well, what are they looking at? What are they looking for? You usually don't hear their voices for the most part because they don't know who to talk to yet. They're the ones that quietly sit in a corner. Because sometimes, especially online, if they ask a question that's stupid, and I did the whole air quotations, they get attacked by people that have slightly more experience or just loud mouths. So they've learned to shut up. But it's like, yeah, I want to hear what the person with not a lot of experience has questions about so we can answer them. So they don't go too far down, you know, the path that all of us went to, and you end up buying stuff you didn't need to buy or picking up bad habits that could have been avoided?
I'm kind of past that. I don't think you do anybody any favor. I know what you're saying. I get it. But I don't think you're doing anybody any favors by, one, like trying to tell them, here's what I found is the best holster. Because how do they know until they've tried a bunch of goofiness to know, oh, yeah, that's right. You know what I mean? Because they're going to go, okay, you put on the whatever the most comfortable holster is for whatever we're talking about. Because, you know, obviously the most comfortable holster for a revolver is different than a most comfortable holder for something else. So whatever the ultimate is, if that person puts it on, they're still going to feel a little bit uncomfortable. So unless they felt really uncomfortable, all they're going to notice is that little bit of uncomfort, I guess is what I was getting at.
What I found in my experience with some of this is working with women, they will more likely listen to that advice. Because dudes go, well, I've looked at everything and, you know, I've, my favorite, blah, 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 who's a Navy SEAL, you know, said Urban Carry was the best. I'm like, then why'd you bother asking? But usually what I found with women, as an instructor, women listen better to instructions. And I think when they are brave enough to ask for advice, they will listen to it, at least with these things, from people that they look to as subject matter experts. I think women will ask questions before they buy something to buy the right thing, and dudes will ask it after they buy it just so they can get verification that they bought the right thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, as I say, confirmation. Like some people are looking for confirmation and some people are looking for suggestion.
Yeah, and I think that's, and maybe it's my bias, but that's what I've noticed, the difference between men and women when they ask advice when they're new to this.
I think it can just be a personality thing too. Like some people have their mindset and they're just looking for you to confirm what they want to do. And mm-hmm. If you don't agree with them, they're not going to agree with you. But
yeah,
I don't know if I can say that's anybody. I think that's just personalities or something. And there's, I don't know what the mix is, I guess, or if there's anything. But and that's where I'm getting at. Like I've just seen the discussion mainly. It's not like I'm an instructor who goes around doing stuff. When I was at the shop all the time, I was around classes constantly. So I've seen plenty of students and stuff, and just seeing students come in, let's say from a lunch break at a CCW class, like, or the, you know, the break through the middle of whatever you want to call the break, when it's next door to a gun shop, guess what? They come over to the gun shop and hang out. So, you know, you can just kind of tell from the beginning to the middle break until when they're done, until they come back as customers after of having carried for a while. Unless you're not paying attention, you can see the difference in that person. They're, like you're saying, their comfortability, their awareness or what they're looking for. You know, the first time they come in, they don't know nothing. By the time they've carried for a year, they come in and ask for what's the bullets they want, and ask if there's something new they need to know about, you know, and then they're on their way. So, you know, they're going to develop, and somewhere in there is, I think, when we have, I don't know what it is, like something, you come into it like, oh, I see this cool thing in a movie, so I'm going to figure out how I can carry like that. And you're going to do everything you can figure out to do to get somebody to agree with you that that's the way you should carry, until you do for a while, I think. And then you go, you know what? A shoulder holster is kind of stupid. You know, if I was sitting in a canoe, yeah, okay, I could see why I wouldn't want a shoulder holster, but I'm not sitting in a canoe and it's in my way all the time and I'm constantly bumping it into things and it feels like there's, you know, something in my coat always, and I have to wear a coat all the time. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think people have to do it before, I don't know. And then some people's personalities can be like, okay, I'll listen to that experience and I'm not going to buy a shoulder holster. Other people are going to go, no, I'm still going to buy a shoulder holster. It's not going to be uncomfortable for me. You know, I wear a coat anyway.
Mm-hmm. You're right. It's funny though.
Like, you know what? Buy the holster. Like, who cares? So we're all going to have a thing of holsters. Like, big whoop. I think we all have a thing of screwdrivers. We probably have way more tape measures than we need. You know, it's like, We're not Borg efficient. Like, we need to buy one holster so that the planet lives longer, so that we have, you know, we have holsters forever. Like, nah, we're going to have vials of holsters. The good news is, at least when I was a kid, I'm thinking about this right now. When I was a little kid playing army or playing whatever, what was I playing with? My dad's pile of holsters. So this is not a new phenomenon. And we couldn't even carry back then, you know, but my holsters were like a World War II tank holster, the World War II, what do you call it? Pilot holster, like a shoulder holster, you know, like the surplus stuff. But, you know, so it was just different options. There was not a million options, but essentially that's what you're doing, is you're creating a bin of stuff for either your kids or your nephews or nieces to play, make costumes with or whatever. There's always
if I would you want, dude, whatever you don't want is going to end up in that used gun trade-in bin for the next dude to buy.
Well, that's a good point, too. Like, that's an excellent point. Like, you don't have to buy brand new retail and everything. It's nice if you want to go to Amazon and use my link and buy everything new off of Amazon. Go for it. It helps us out a bunch. But you can definitely go to the gun shop. And I always say, you know, visit your local shop. Support them when you can. When we did the tour and stuff, you know, that was the whole goal. You know, I went into a lot of debt just so we could, you know, advocate for going to local shops. Again, you don't have to buy their most expensive stuff in the shop. Oftentimes, buying stuff out of their $5 bin is 100% profit for them, because somebody brought in, here's my 30-30 lever action. I don't want it anymore because I need to upgrade to whatever. And here's everything that I had for it. And all that everything that they had for it, they just gave to the shop. The shop put it in that $5 bin. Every time you buy something out of that $5 bin, it's probably worth $35 or $70. Boom. Like, the shop made an extra $5. Everybody's a winner there. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff where you can keep a shop in business by just buying stuff out of there. Everything's a dollar. Everything's $5 every time you go in there. You know, if you do it once in a year, it doesn't help them out very much. But if you make a point to spend $20 in the shop, and if you don't want to necessarily buy $10 worth of product for $20 every time you do that, think about those $5 bins, or go to shops that have those $5 bins. I'm cheap, like you say, but that's an awesome way to be able to tear through holster styles and, you know, FBI can't.
100%. Yep. Really, that smaller like the back carry.
The only problem with FBI, well, I don't like smaller back carry because of I'm fat and it just pulls my pants down in the wrong place. Like, I don't want any of that happening. Plus, I'm also do a lot of parkour, so I don't want to like snap my back if I fall on it. But I really like the FBI can't for whatever reason. I thought it was cool. But try to find a holster anywhere with the FBI can't. Like, in the 80s, you could. In the 90s, I guess, or whatever. But anyway, so if you wanted to try something like that, yeah, buy a $5 holster. Probably was $70 when it was new. You can find out if you like it or not. And then go buy the $70 one if you really like it. Or have somebody make another one.
You can also pick up things that everybody says, oh, well, that's old. You know, like key mod handguards. And I'm like, why wouldn't I? Or even key mod attachment parts. I'm like, I don't care. All I'm putting is a flashlight and a sling on this thing. Why do I give a damn?
Yeah, that's I don't know. That's an interesting one. The attachment methods and the divisions, or the, what do you call it? Like the camps that have arisen. You know, there's the quad rail camp. There's the, whatever you just said, the key mods and the other
key
ones.
Key mod and M-lock.
Then there's probably something else, because I don't even know them all, but there's probably somebody that pitches in for like the round thing, and then maybe somebody that doesn't care, and then maybe something else I'm missing completely.
But I'm like, because one of the things that's a big topic, that was the word I was looking for, a big topic for YouTube videos, and even mentally, because we do it. If we're gun nerds, we do it. Mentally putting together, like, in your mind, what would I put together if I had to do a $600 AR build? Like, how could I do it? How would I do it? And I'm like, man, you hit that used gun bin and you have a free float for it, and that you picked up for $30, because no one uses key mod anymore. All right, cool. Boom. There you go. At least I've done it. I've tried to put it together, because, again, doing this and having people ask you questions. Some are really honest when I say, you know, hey, I want to put together an AR. Well, what's your budget? And when they give you a budget that's almost ridiculous, you're like, all right, dude, you're going to actually have to put in work to do this. You're not going to get off the shelf with this. Are you ready to do that? And you tell them, where they can get stuff inexpensively at, how they can save a little here and save a little there and still end up with the capability, even if it's something like KeyMod. Cool. Even if it's a light brand, it's not a surefire, but it's almost a surefire. I mean, I tell them to go with Streamlight first if you're not going to spend surefire money. But then after that, like I used a Coast flashlight in my first low light rifle class, and that was straight from, I think it was Home Depot. I bought a barrel clamp and I clamped it onto the side of my SKS and I ran the class. It was an indoor rifle 2 class. And I kept up. When it came time to use the light, I was able to run the, 6-hour class using that Coast light. It worked every time. Don't ask me where that flashlight is now. But it worked for at that point in time. Now, when you look, like right now, I have my home defense AR right here, and it has a nightstick flashlight on it from a company called Nightstick. And it's a 800 lumen weapons mounted. Well, it's not even a weapons mounted light. It's a handheld in the clamp. Decent price, decent light. Has gone to the range on a bunch of pistol caliber carbines and worked every time. And that's what it's on right now. And I also have LA police gear flashlight. I have a stream light. So if it goes down, I have other lights within hand distance in my home defense scenario.
Aldo has a good point here. What works for one doesn't work for another. I was going to add to that too, that, over time, what you hated now, 3 or 4 years from now could flip around. And that's happened to me 100%. With collecting and stuff. I'll buy stuff and not even pay attention because it was cheap or because, you know, I just knew I needed it for the collection or something. And then years later, you know, just developing the collection and stuff, I can appreciate the stuff that I just casually acquired. And, you know, so glad that I did, kind of thing. So, you know, with the holsters and stuff, I can't say it's exactly the same as my, I'm thinking of my bayonets right now, but, you know, just something that you're going to do over many years. But with holsters, I can think of a couple instances where, oh, I'm thinking like the nylon holsters I really liked when in the 90s. Because they were so cool, like SWAT officers, SWAT had them and stuff, and people jumping out of like helicopters and stuff would have had nylon back then still, because Kydex hadn't really come around yet. And so that would have been like your high speed SAS guys or something, and then like SWAT. So that's about as high speed as you could get back in the day. So that nylon stuff was just billions of dollars. Like it was beyond anybody. You didn't really even see it that much because nobody could carry. But then I remember somebody showed up at a gun show here in town with a ton of that stuff. And it was super cheap, and it was like not blemishes, but like sewing errors. So like they didn't even finish sewing some of them because there was a mess up. And so it was like from the factory. So it wasn't even seconds. It was like literally like probably 80%, 90% of the way sewn, but they were super cheap, like $5 for the holster or something. So I grabbed a bunch of them and I ended up using them for nothing because I just bought them at first, right? Just to have them so they were cool looking or whatever. But, like if I ever did cosplay or something, that would have been probably what they would have been good for. But years later, when we were doing something somewhere, I was like, oh, you know what these are perfect for? And they were just good for when I was carrying a bunch of guns somewhere to a class and essentially to use them as, what do you call those little tiny gun?
Gun stocks?
Yeah, you know, but I mean, like they make little tiny ones for pistols instead of the long ones for rifles. But the little pockets, you know, like the big carpet that you fold in half and it's got a zip. Like that's what the that's, unless you buy something out of nylon, that's pretty much, at least I had a bunch of those available to me because they have them at the shop all the time. But instead of carrying around those things, you know, I could just put them in these holsters and now my guns aren't smacking into each other in the bag, because you know I don't carry my guns around in the boxes they bought in, you know, I bought them in, you know, and I don't have if I'm carrying a holster I like, then guess what? I'm carrying it, right? Like, it's on.
Yep.
So what am I going to carry the rest of my three guns that I'll fit in this holster? Well, that's where I was like, oh, I got all these nylon holsters. Perfect. But anyway, so I ended up finding a use for them years later that I would have never thought of when I first bought them. And I don't want to say like hoard junk, but go ahead and hoard junk. It's only a holster.
Yeah, no. I mean,
that's a great idea. The ones I'm talking about are huge, like the big giant nylon drop legs. It's probably like 5 pounds of nylon altogether, but a big flat.
Oh, the drop leg holsters from back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
I finally did sell them on eBay, but I'm guessing the person that bought them, I probably sold these like 2-3 years ago to pay bills. And I'm guessing the person that bought them today is probably for cosplay or dressing up like a mannequin for some, like, you know, 90s SWAT looking guy or something. Okay, well, I tell you what, we're 90 minutes in. I was supposed to keep this at an hour. I know Tony only had an hour. Okay. You're home already then, huh?
Yep, I'm home.
Right on. Well, at least we got you entertained and occupied while you were driving. Thanks for going out and getting the show, the diversity shoot set up for another year.
Yep. So I got it set up for another year. I'm on a hunt for some more ranges and some ammo sponsors for 2024. I might break them down in the quarters, you know, do them every 3 months. We can switch up. That way I'm not beating up one guy or one small company. I can spread it out.
Well, I'm going to encourage you to put a ammunition level, you know, like the ammo box or something level at the Patreon. So people that want can, you know, if you had 100 people dropping $25 on you for a box of ammo, that would be 100 boxes of ammo each month, right?
Yeah, right. Oof. That would be awesome setup.
Anyway, so we'll, if you want, we can update the site here with the new dates or whatever. If you want to send them to me, I can update it. But yep, I'll go we'll ahead go off there and do that.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining me for another Ask On Question. Sorry for last couple of weeks. We've been just catching up and farting around and not really answering questions, but I think we did a pretty good job. We got 2 or 3 questions off the database over there. As the beginning of the show says, though, Ask Gun Questions. I bought that domain in 2007 when I bought a bunch of stuff. You know, like I say, we're gun websites for a reason. I have a lot of websites. Most of them are just out there to provide information. When I saw the internet starting up, I thought, let's make sure that there's a place on the internet for data, not for anything else, just to get information out there. So a lot of them don't have, I mean, I guess there's technically an ad or two on them, but they're not there to make money as an ad site. They're just there to be a place with the info. Like I say, the internet is recorded more than once a day at this point. So there's websites that we've had up like this one since 2007 that have just put valid gun information up there. We know we're here to normalize guns, to make it as obvious as possible for people to, you know, get information. So this is an effort in that. And since 2007, this, you know, the effort has changed over and over. I mean, even what, a year ago, Clover was hanging out with us all the time. So like this changes all the time. If somebody's interested in joining and being part of it, if you got cues for the A's that are out there, let me know. You know, there's this, and we're just doing this mainly so me and Tony can hang out and chat. But also, you know, to accomplish this, to get some, I guess, time each week for people that know that there's a place that they can get questions answered. And have it focused on guns. Most of the stuff I do is 2A focused, so I do like to every once in a while talk about guns. At least give you my old crotchety opinions on guns, because I have different crotchety opinions as a lifetime gun owner. And Tony and Clover, when he was jumping around, same thing. You know, we have different opinions than people that jump in with all. I mean, it's not like it's like we know more. It's just that we've had time on the clock. So we know what it's like to be bored with a whole platform. We know what it's like to get exhausted with lever actions and then get into shotguns and then get into pistols again and then get rifles and then go back to bolt actions. Like, you don't just, when you've been old and you've been around for a while, people that are just starting just haven't had that chance yet. So hopefully we're giving you some crotchety old advice that's useful. I forgot about the poll. So is Tony brought up pizza and bread earlier inadvertently. And I made a poll out of it. So people have been answering this whole time. the poll was, is pizza bread? And the options were, number one, yes, under the cheese. Number two was kinda, but it's a reach. Number three is maybe technically only. And then number four was no way. So what's your vote, Tony? What would you have voted for?
Oh, it is, but it's a reach.
Okay. And then which do you think won?
Oh, okay. Because I was about to click on it. I think the first one won. I think, yep. Yes.
Under the cheese got 40%. Technically only got 27%. A reach got 20%. And then no way got 13%. So I don't even know. I never even thought of it before, but it sounded like something that I'd never heard anybody have a poll about ever. So I figured let's put it out there. So, pretty much
89% it is. Yeah.
I mean, it is bread, but whether or not you account it as bread, because here's the thing, would you ever put down a pizza on the table and then also have bread on the table?
Got a point.
You know what I'm saying? Like at a meal, I can tell you, hell yeah, my grandma would not make food without bread on the table. So
bread, regardless,
you could eat sandwiches and there's going to be bread on the table. Number one, like, we'd have pizza and spaghetti and bread. Thank you very much. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like there was definitely no worries about gluten back in the day, but
no.
So I don't think like pizza, I mean, technically it's bread, but I think it's a separate thing. You know, that's why they have it a different name. But see, garlic bread, exactly. Okay, well, hopefully we gave everybody something to go get hungry about and go eat. Have a great rest of the week. Tony, you take us out of here. Let us know what's happening with whatever the next diversity shoot is.
Cool. The next diversity shoot, if you want to follow us, go to diversityshoot.com. You can also follow us on The Second Is for Everyone on Facebook. Simon Says Train on Instagram. Second for Everyone on X. Our next diversity shoot is April 11th at Gun for Hire Range in Woodland Park, New Jersey. If you want to donate, visit diversityshoot.com. You can make your donations there through PayPal or through our Patreon. So I really appreciate it. What else? Oh, and you can listen to the 2A4E podcast, The Second Is for Everyone podcast, on your favorite podcast app. I know 100% it's on iTunes and it's on Spotify. So if you want to check us out, please do. I just put out a brand new podcast last week, and I'm recording another one this week. I'm trying to stay on schedule this year. So thank you very much for dropping by and putting up with me.
GearWebsites.com is your source for firearms-based playing cards and books. We also have mugs, shirts, and posters with designs that we've made live. Of course, we have patches. Every Friday is Free Patch Friday. We appreciate your support. Thank you for shopping at GearWebsites.com.